Welcome to Ever-Changing Technology. I'm your host, Jim Bradfield. On this show, we explore how technology is changing our lives and what it means for the future. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Alan Badeau, an AI evangelist and CEO of Alan Badeau LLC. He's also the founder of Harmonic AI, with more than 20 years of experience leading advanced tech innovation, digital transformation, and cybersecurity solutions. His mission is to solve tough challenges and help people and businesses grow through AI, blockchain, and quantum technologies. Dr. Alan Badeau, welcome to the show.
Hi, Jim. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad you could make it, man.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. So let's start with education, because many families feel like schools are falling behind while technology races ahead. So, you know, viewers seem to be struggling with education, keeping pace with technology, you know, and worrying that kids are being left behind. And I can understand that. I have grandkids of my own, you know, and I worry about that as well. So this segment will discuss how AI is supporting teachers, parents, and students without replacing human connection. So, Alan, how is AI helping teachers in classrooms today so, you know, the kids don't get left behind?
Well, you know, I wish I could say it's standard across all school districts. It's not even standard from one school to the other in the same county or city. Mm. You know, there's a huge argument that's taking place right now, and it's been going on for, you know, almost since ChatGPT came out, in that should students use it or shouldn't they use it? And, you know, that debate is really very localized, and it's unfortunate, because from my perspective, I've always, you know, and what I've been, you know, trying to get the message across is that, you know, if you teach kids, even teachers, how to use it and how to use it the right way, then you're giving them an advantage on, you know, just about anything that they try to tackle. And, you know, I can understand the other side in that, you know, oh, it's good to learn fundamentals. And of course it is. It's good to, you know, have, you know, students do things, you know, on their own. But, you know, AI is just like any other tool. You know, remember when the TI-85 calculator came out and they banned that for a while? They didn't understand it. And so if folks would use it the right way and, you know, engage it and have it, you know, be used in the classroom at the same time, I think everybody would benefit from it, as opposed to some are and some aren't. And I think it would help with the argument too.
Yeah. So, you know, and that's a good perspective. I appreciate that. Now, for parents worried about screen time, for example, you know, how can AI make learning feel a little bit more personal and maybe safer instead of really overwhelming?
Yeah, that is a great question, because screen time, you know, it doesn't just go to the AI. It's a struggle with technology just in general. But from an AI perspective, that the really neat thing is that you can engage it in ways that you didn't think that you could. And I gave an example to one teacher, and I said, you know, I'm going to write a story about a Civil War veteran who's trying to write home to his mother about some of the activities that were taking place. And so I showed it just a generic letter that it wrote from the soldier to, you know, his mother. And then I said, I want to change this. I want to add a different perspective. I want to look at this, you know, those kind of things. And you could see how it started to evolve. And then I said, okay, now read it from the mother's perspective and tell me, you know, some of the things that you know, what would she do to respond back? How would she do that? And, you know, that interaction back and forth allows people to go a lot deeper into whether it's political events, whether it's history, whether it's even math, for instance, that, you know, you don't get in the classroom. And so as they're using and trying it out, you're teaching them. It's not just something that you ask it a question like Google. You want to ask it different frameworks. You want to give it different perspectives. You want to pull additional information out of it. And by doing that, it's really a win-win for everybody.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty impressive. I mean, you know, it's pretty clear to me based on our previous discussions that, you know, AI really is very, very good with things, but you really have to give it perspective in order to make this thing work, right? Because otherwise, you know, it's like, you know, how do we fix that so AI can bring remote learning into the classroom? So it's not just like logging into a Zoom class and it's just sitting there.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we have been working on, it's a project really, we started with an executive coaching firm with Stuart Leadership, and then we had worked on, you know, some different ways that you could really allow it to be an assistant, but an executive coaching assistant, for example, right? And so you ask it questions as an adult, and it would give you, you know, some different answers and give you some ideas and what you needed to do to improve. Now, what we've also done is we've started to really fine tune how that behavior would be so that if you give it to a student, then the student can continue to use it year after year after year, and it will grow with them, it will understand them, it will be able to converse with them. And so it really becomes your academic advisor. It gives you study plans. It can do, you know, all those types of things that are really hard to get right now, whether it's, you know, the teacher, you know, 15, 20 kids in a class in some cases, that's tough to be able to do that kind of interaction with everybody. Parents, same sort of thing. You know, it's difficult. And so it allows the child to really explore some things that they didn't think that, you know, it would be tough to explore today just using a normal, you know, computer and Google. And what you said is so important. Perspective is really the key that, you know, if you are, for instance, let's look at a creative, you know, I keep going to writing, but if you look at a creative writing class, imagine if the student could say, well, can you write a short story in the, you know, in the manner of Chaucer or something like that? You know, some author, or, you know, F. Scott Fitzgerald, writing, you know, a follow-on story from this perspective, and then have Ernest Hemingway, you know, edit it or something like that. It allows them to think more creatively and see what the results are, as opposed to just thinking and writing stuff down and never having an idea what that outcome would be. That's much more powerful than just writing something down and saying, yep, this is what I think it would be. They can read it, they can see it, they can really digest it. And then that's that thing that I'm worried about, that some students are falling way behind in that and others are really taking off.
Well, yeah, you know, and given that, what about kids who maybe are, you know, a little bit learning impaired, or kids who just struggle with reading or math? I mean, can they do the same kinds of things? Do they feel included, or are they left out?
Well, they don't have to be left out. So one of the things that we've been exploring, and you really can do this, that if you have a willingness to share just some basic information, not names, not anything like that. You know, say for instance, maybe you have a hard time with vocabulary, or you have a hard time spelling, or whatever that is. If you tell the AI, present the information to me because I have difficulties in doing this, this, and this, and I need to improve, then the AI will do that. It will also help you with lesson plans. It will help you with those types of activities that will allow you to really improve at a measured pace and be able to see what that improvement is. So think about turning this, you know, ChatGPT or Claude or whatever it is, into your personal tutor. And something that you can interact with. That's pretty good.
Well, yeah. And so, you know, it seems to me, you know, that AI, you know, we've been talking about whether AI is going to replace teachers, or it's more about giving, you know, teachers better tools to connect. And it seems like it's the latter, right?
Yeah. You can't replace teachers. You just can't. It's, you know, and teachers are, you know, if you think about going back to interactions that you have with teachers and the bonds that you develop. It's more than just, you know, her writing on the chat, you know, the chalkboard, or him writing on the chalkboard, or whatever. That bond is something that you can't take away, because, you know, we're not robots. We don't learn like robots. But by giving them that additional tool set from an AI perspective, you allow that student to interact with different points of view, understand and ask questions from, you know, the curiosity that kids always have. And I think that combination and really embracing that is going to allow our teachers, you know, to do so much more, allow our students to learn so much more, but then also look at a whole bunch of different ways that, you know, facts can be presented to them, and then they can start to develop opinions and really start to, you know, understand the reasoning behind, you know, things that are either written or, you know, spelling or whatever that is. It really just empowers them.
Yeah, that's actually pretty awesome. Now, you know, so clearly to me, AI is never going to fully replace a teacher, and we're going to need the human interaction and all of those kind of things. And, you know, so is this just in its infancy, and we're going to see this come into the way everything is done with remote classrooms and things like that? Is that what you're looking at?
Well, I would, you know, I don't know about the remote classroom thing. And just because at certain ages, I think you've got to have that social interaction. And, you know, without that social interaction, I think kids really struggle after a while. I know I saw statistics, you know, during COVID and post-COVID about the social norms and the social interactions of students that didn't get to really, you know, be next to somebody or actually talk to them face to face. And I think we're gonna have to make up for some of that as we continue to go along. But what it does do is, you know, after that, you know, the classroom time or things like that, it does allow them more freedom to really explore things that they don't have a chance any other way to explore. You can only do so much on Google, you know, by Googling things and by looking at Wikipedia, and I know, you know, that's questionable sometimes anyway, right? And so you've got to have, you know, some norms around that. Now, that also means, though, that the AI models, you've got to make sure that somebody else is watching, so that whatever questions are asked, the responses are appropriate. Because sometimes, like we know, the AI models, they misbehave, they hallucinate. And so we've just got to have type checks and really solid guardrails around those, so that our, you know, kids are not only using them the right way, but aren't putting things in there that, you know, you wouldn't want in there, and that the models themselves are actually performing the right way.
Perfect. Well, listen, we'll be right back. Coming up, we're going to look at AI and cybersecurity and how criminals are already using it against us.
And we're back. I'm Jim Bradfield, and this is Ever-Changing Technology here on Now Media Television.
Welcome back to Ever-Changing Technology. Loving what you're watching? Don't miss a moment of Ever-Changing Technology or any of your favorite Now Media TV shows, live or on demand, anytime, anywhere. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and enjoy instant access to our full lineup of bilingual programming that's both in English and Spanish. You prefer to listen on the go? Well, catch the Now Media podcast version of the show right on the Now Media TV website at www.nowmedia.tv. From business and breaking news to lifestyle, culture, and everything in between, Now Media TV is streaming 24/7, ready whenever you are. I'm here with Dr. Al Badeau, and now we're shifting to one of the most urgent issues, something that he and I have talked about quite a bit: cybersecurity. Online threats are growing every day, and many people feel like criminals are always one step ahead. So viewers worry about hackers, Alan, scams, stolen information, and things like that. This segment's going to explore how criminals are using AI and how AI is also our best defense. So, Alan, how are criminals already using AI to trick people or break into systems?
Well, they've been using parts of AI for better than 10 years. Now, not the ChatGPT types of things, but, you know, there were some automation capabilities, you know, cyber attacks, those kind of things that have been going on for a while. And the hackers were the ones that were leading the forefront on that. And, you know, the interesting thing, though, is that now with ChatGPT, with some unfiltered large language models, and I'm not going to tell you which ones will do this, but you can actually ask them questions and it can give you better part of 90% of a response that could enable some folks to create them on their own. Now, there's a lot of steps that go into that, but, you know, it's really can turn somebody that doesn't have those kind of skill sets anymore into somebody that can quickly learn them and deploy them and get them out there. Now, again, there are a lot of things in between that would allow folks to do that, but it's really just that ability for it to just tell you whatever you want and try to give you an answer in many cases. And that's a big issue. And those folks have been really taking advantage of that, either from a, you know, a spoofing perspective, whether it's a your personal health information, whether it's, you know, financial information. It's really just allowed them to generate mass quantities of these types of materials, get it out there, and hope that somebody hooks onto it. And obviously they are, otherwise they would have stopped doing it. And so it's just really speed and ability to deploy it anywhere is what they're taking advantage of.
Yeah, so what's the simplest way AI can help protect their personal information then, especially if they're not very tech savvy?
Well, you know, email, for instance. You know, there are certain things that cybersecurity professionals do to try to protect, you know, the ecosystem, for example. You know, there's threat detection algorithms that they're using. There's, you know, so many different real-time activities that they're monitoring. There's insider threat things, all, you know, all those different, you know, capabilities of a true, you know, cyber company. They're trying to do that. What they can't do is monitor what goes on in between here of people, right? So people get in hurries. We know that they're, you know, everybody's busy, but all it takes is one person to click on an email that can launch a virus, it can launch a Trojan horse, it can launch whatever that is, and really wreak havoc on everything around them. Or click on something, enter their personal information because it looks like their company stuff, and boom, there goes all your usernames, your passwords for your company or your financial and banking information, right? And so that's how AI can protect people. But really, it will come down to training, using AI for training, trying to get folks more engaged, do things more, spot checking of folks, periodic checks, so that if somebody does click on something, that they get a little bit of extra training, that kind of stuff, it can really help.
Yeah, so what happens then if businesses don't invest in AI-powered security and training? I mean, is that what you're talking about, that it's just going to blow it up?
It could. The challenge that, you know, we are seeing a really an evolution of how hackers are going after information. So they're less interested in, you know, your personal information per se, more interested in trying to hack into a hospital and encrypt their entire database and then get ransom money for it, right? You know, we've seen that over and over and over again, and it's institutions that we thought were very well protected. you know, whether it was the insurance, whether it's some banking, whether it's a hospital, even you know, gaming, for heaven's sakes. And we always thought that those systems were taken care of pretty well. They are, you know, using those types of things to do that. And so, you know, but if you look at the root cause, it's always the same. Somebody gave off their badge. Somebody typed in a password. Somebody did this, something like the, you know, something else that, you know, you could prevent if they had the proper training. You can invest and you or not invest. You can take the risk if you don't invest, if you don't train your people, but it's only a matter of time, especially as you get bigger. You know, your attractiveness gets much, much, you know, higher if you are, you know, become more of a known quantity, you are more successful. I don't think I would take that risk. So you got to do something. You really have to.
Yeah, understood. And then can AI predict those attacks before they happen? Or, you know, is that just something that is going to hopefully be a part of it in the future?
Well, there are some things that AI can do. It can look at you can have it scan your environment and say, I have weaknesses, holes here, here, and here. And so it can help you with compliance. It can help you with making sure your systems are up to date. It can help you from a training perspective to say, oh, you know what, Alan clicked on this email and it took to the bank account and, you know, for the company. And guess what? He entered his details and boom, that's a problem. He needs some retraining, right? And so it can automate that piece. So there's a lot of things that it can do. What it can't do is say, you know what, we're going to get hit by this kind of, you know, attack. And I think it's getting better. It's giving us more information, but we still can't predict, you know, which one, when, and where it's going to hit us. And so the only thing that you can do is just make sure you're prepared.
Yeah. I mean, that's really good advice. And we really appreciate it. And so, Alan, if viewers want to keep up with your insights on cybersecurity and AI, where can they find you online?
They can go to my LinkedIn account. And, you know, it's just LinkedIn, Alan Badeau, or they can go to my website, alanbadeau.ai, or they can watch my Now Media TV show, AI Today, on Wednesdays. And we talk about some of this stuff and we deep dive and I give them some examples. A couple weeks ago, gave an example how you can see if your email is getting spoofed or not just by using ChatGPT. So, you know, we try to hit a lot of broad topics there.
Awesome, man. All right. So up next, we're going to be looking at AI and robotics, factories, warehouses, that kind of thing. So we'll see what it means for the future of work.
And we're back. I'm Jim Bradfield, and this is Ever-Changing Technology here on Now Media Television.
Welcome back to Ever-Changing Technology. I'm here with Dr. Alan Badeau, and now we're diving into robotics. Many people worry automation is replacing jobs instead of creating them. But really, is that the full story? You know, viewers seem to be fearing losing jobs to machines, but also wonder what new opportunities AI and robotics might bring them. This segment is going to reframe automation as teamwork between humans and machines. So, Alan, how is AI making factories and warehouses run smoother without forgetting about the people who work there?
I think we've seen a shift. You know, when AI first really started to get popular, everybody was trying to deploy it somewhere in their factory so they could say, yep, I'm doing it. And, you know, it's working great. Unfortunately, they deployed it too quickly and it wasn't working great. And that was just on some of the back office types of activities. Where I have seen the most success, you know, by especially in the manufacturing industry, it was really around optimizing their supply chain, being able to say, you know what, I'm going to use AI to get some more predictability and, you know, and really flexibility that if I need to get a certain part or certain, you know, material, that I can multi-source it and I can figure out when it's going to be here, when I need it, those kind of things. That has helped a lot of, you know, enterprises really take control of their supply chain and really from a logistical perspective that they didn't have before. You know, they would order something, it might take 3-4 days, but now they've got more choice. Now they've got more options. Now they have more predictability around that. And that's been a real windfall for a lot of companies that have just, you know, had some of those struggles in the past. On the back end too, really around being able to understand their basic data that they have. What are their performance? You know, how can they optimize performance? They're using AI to do that. How can they optimize their, you know, their financials? And not just from a, oh, we're just going to cut jobs perspective, but, you know, maybe instead of having so many people on shift 2, maybe we have a few more on shift 3 because shift 3 doesn't have as much traffic problems, whatever that could be. But they're looking at actually resource allocations, and AI is a great tool to do that. And that's just one of the, you know, other, you know, there's a whole bunch of other examples that I could talk about, but, you know, folks are trying to use it the right way. Because if you think about manufacturing, we've already gone through from the 40s to really the early 80s. We've gone through that. Oh, we don't need people. We can use robots to do a lot of this stuff. You know, there's not a lot of room for manufacturing to get rid of more people without having some negative consequences around that.
Yeah. So basically, you know, we're talking about not losing so many people and making changes, but what kind of new jobs are created because of AI and robotics that people don't even know exist yet?
Well, the great thing is that, you know, because manufacturing is really trying to take the lead on this. If you're an engineer, a prompt engineer, if you're somebody that knows computer science fairly well, if you are willing to learn, you know, how to interact with, you know, things like ChatGPT or whatever those other tools that they have that they want to deploy, you know, that's opening a completely new segment for, you know, the manufacturing industry, because, you know, it's not only the trades that they have to get expertise on now, they also need skill sets to help run AI, set up AI, monitor AI, look at AI. And they have, you know, they were really the first ones to say, you know what, it's not really ready to replace all of our people doing call centers, for example. So we're going to pull all that back. We're going to integrate people with the AI. And, you know, we need people that understand how to do that. And so it is opening up a lot of other jobs that traditionally you wouldn't think were pure manufacturing.
Interesting. Now, when we talk about AI in designing things, now, does it design parts, does it actually think up innovative designs or just make them faster?
So what I would say is it makes them faster if you have somebody that understands how to interact with it. And what I mean by that is, you know, I give this as an example. I am by far the worst drawer in the world, by far. I'm a stick figure guy, and that's the best that you're ever going to get from me. Now, if I have an idea, though, and I want to have what I call them thought experiments, and I want to ask and interact with the AI to say, can you design this? What happens if I change this? You know, oh, I want, you know, a different shape for, you know, for example, then the AI can help you do that. And it's the same thing with drawing. I can tell it a vision. I can interact with it. I can change it. And the AI will do that piece. But you can't just say, you know, design me, you know, a certain part all by yourself and have the AI go out and do that. Because what's going to happen is it'll give you something, but it's probably not going to be right. It's probably not going to work. And it's probably not going to be what you thought you know, you thought it would generate. And so you're going to actually create more rework if you do something like that. So you've got to interact with it and have that thought exercise with it. And that's where the real power comes into play. It's when you put, you know, a leader in whatever that manufacturing space is or expertise with AI and allow them to go back and forth and communicate and ask questions of each other. You get some really strong stuff after that.
Well, that's actually pretty That's probably pretty encouraging for people who are scared about losing their jobs. So, you know, what else do you say to them? Do they, you know, really invest in training themselves in higher technology or understanding AI, or what do you recommend that they do?
So I'll just tell you a really quick story. When I was in school, I was taking a math class, and it had a lot of computer science information in there. And a person walked in, a gentleman walked in. We all thought it was our professor. He was 82 years old. And he said, you know, he was taking the class as a student. He said, you know, this whole computer stuff and the internet, I don't want it to pass me by. So I want to understand what it can do. And, you know, he was sharp. He did great in the class. And, you know, I encourage people, whether you want to use it in your job or not, it's a technology that is not going anywhere. And so everybody should invest some time in learning, you know, how to use it, how to interact with it, what to say and what not to say. And if you can apply that to your job, that's even better, because somebody that knows how to do that and understands how to do that, it's the people that can do that that are going to replace the people that can't do that when the company decides they want to go in that direction. And they will decide to go in that direction. So it's only going to help you if you do that in the long run, and it's going to make it easier for you to help with the transition and all those other things, because you will be a sought after, asset that a lot of folks can't, or won't be able to do because they're not taking the time to learn it.
Yeah, that's so basically what we're saying is humans and robots really are going to have to figure out how to work side by side, right, as a team, mm-hmm. instead of one replacing the other. What's the best way to come into your job and be positive about it instead of just freaked out?
Well, you know, if you're an employee, and I'm gonna from my experience, what I have seen, I think people are very willing to try new technology if management does the right thing and doesn't spring it on them, meaning they come in one day and all of a sudden they've got an AI loaded on their laptop, and they tell you, yeah, you have to interact with it, you have to do this, you have to do that. That is the worst scenario, and I've seen it, and it doesn't go well, because people immediately think Terminator, they think job replacement, they have negative thoughts around it, they had no choice in doing it, and they feel like they're training their AI to replace them. And yep. One, it probably won't be able to replace them anyway, but then two, you have already started off on a negative foot from an enterprise level, and so it's not going to be successful. If management takes the time and explains it, gets the people involved, that's how they're going to be able to use it and come in and not be scared.
Yeah, exactly. That's an excellent point. So we'll be right back. Up next, Alan and I are going to talk about AI in healthcare and how it's helping doctors, patients, and families.
And we're back. I'm Jim Bradfield, and this is Ever-Changing Technology here on Now Media Television.
Welcome back to Ever-Changing Technology. Loving what you're watching? Don't miss a moment of Ever-Changing Technology or any of your favorite Now Media TV shows, live or on demand, anytime, anywhere. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and enjoy instant access to our full lineup of bilingual programming that's both English and Spanish. Prefer to listen on the go? Catch the podcast version of the show right on Now Media TV website at www.nowmedia.tv. From business and breaking news to lifestyle, culture, and everything in between, Now Media TV is streaming 24/7, ready whenever you are. So we've covered education, cybersecurity, and robotics. Now let's close with one of the most personal topics of all, healthcare. Many people feel healthcare is too expensive and too slow. Can AI make it faster, more affordable, more human? Viewers worry about the cost, speed, and privacy in healthcare, Alan. This segment explores how AI is helping doctors detect diseases earlier, personalize treatment, and protect patient data. So, Alan, how is AI changing the way doctors find diseases earlier and help those patients?
Well, I think it's giving them, you know, opportunities to see things and really see them faster, provided the models are trained, of course, the right way and they're in their benchmark and things like that. You know, as well as is really, you know, looking at the patient as a whole, going back through all of their data, understanding all of their images and putting all that information together so that when the AI is looking at something or even when the doctor is looking at something that the AI put together from a data visualization perspective, that it's giving the doctors more information and allowing them to make a better judgment. And same thing with the AI. If the AI is allowed to do that, you know, that's something that it's helping with as well. Now, one of the things that is interesting, and actually I just saw a study about this morning where, you know, a doctor that is working with AI, you know, before they had AI, say they had an accuracy of 98%, for example, and with the accuracy, it improved maybe 1% or something, but the speed was a big difference. When the AI went away, then the doctors actually were still able to perform at about the same percent of accuracy, but they actually were able to go faster. And so it seems like there's some on the job training that's also taking place just from a rhythm, from a visualization, from all those things. And so I think that just shows you, though, again, using it as a teammate as opposed to a replacement is really the way to go.
Yeah, that's really an interesting statistic. I have never heard anything like that. It's amazing.
First time. Yeah, that's the first time I've heard that too.
Wow. So in healthcare, you know, trying to make things more personal, you know, does it also help them be more efficient and effective, but also help them understand patients as individuals?
I think so. You know, that's one thing, you know, there's two things really in med school from folks that I've talked to that, you know, med school doesn't train you how to run a business, because doctors are running businesses. Even, you know, if they're with hospitals or something, that's a little different, but if they're in private practice, they're running businesses. And it also doesn't teach you how to interact with people, and that's hard. And I think AI can help facilitate definitely the business part, but even some of the personal relations and really trying to, you know, get to know your patients a little bit faster, get to know them a little bit quicker, you know, and that's the trade-off that you have to make, because on the flip side, patients don't want to interact with robots, and they don't want to interact with happy robots because it ticks them off. So something to think about.
Wow. I actually hadn't thought of that, but you know, yeah. You know, at UCSF Medical Center, they had a couple of robots, Lisa Marie and Elvis. And they used to dispense the drugs and go up and down, you know, the elevators and things like that. And we put in the wireless networks to help them do that. But I thought that was kind of interesting. But what other things is AI being used for in hospitals that the average person might not even realize?
Well, some of it is, you know, around diets. What can folks eat? You know, it's helping with diet plans. It's helping with really just general health plans, trying to, you know, get people to be healthier, you know, giving them additional material so that they can read and understand. You know, if you think about it, one of the hardest things to do is have a discussion between a patient and a doctor. Why? Because the doctor's going to say a whole bunch of big words, not on purpose, but they're big words and people get intimidated by that. Well, imagine if you're a patient and you've got an AI translator for you. You're both speaking English, but they're not the same English. The AI can help you understand what the heck did he just say that's 42 words or 42 letters, right? You know, it's using it from that perspective again to better understand what is actually, you know, taking place. And I think it's allowing patients to feel more comfortable in asking more questions, asking, you know, the hard questions, and then even trying to personalize, you know, some of their treatments and follow-up plans.
Yeah, and for families worried about privacy, and you talked about all that data and everything, how do we make sure that AI protects sensitive health data instead of misusing it?
Well, you know, the challenge around that is really, you know, really going to be driven by how it's implemented. If it's implemented the right way, if it's your data is initially encrypted in the first place, you know, those two things will help really guarantee, you know, so what your privacy is, your health privacy is going to look like. Now, again, it's the same sort of thing, though. If you just put it all out there and, you know, don't pay attention to owning your digital identity, then it's just as easy for anybody else to get that as opposed to not. However, I will say this from a cyber perspective, we'll just touch on that a little bit again. You know, those hackers that are taking over these hospitals, they don't want your personal data. They don't care about that. They just want to get a ransom money from the hospital, so they'll encrypt it and then they can go back to work. They're not trying to steal your personal data. And so I just want to, you know, leave some concerns around that too, because that scares a lot of people. And in the long run, they really don't care about that because that's not what their intent is. So you really just have to put a security stack in place, monitor it, monitor your own stuff, and do the best you can.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking in terms of that kind of thing, you know, do you see AI making healthcare more affordable for everyone, or is it just going to be mainly helping big hospitals get bigger?
If you are in a rural area, and that's really where I've seen a lot of, you know, help come along, you know, you can get some treatments by Zoom calls, you can do, you know, those kind of things. AI and the software really allows rural areas that don't have access to hospitals per se and have to talk to a doctor on the phone, you know, or a video call or something like that. It's giving them an opportunity to, you know, communicate, or if they go get imaging done, for example, in a tiny hospital, you know, it's allowing AI to read some of those. So your treatment is a little bit faster. Now, I don't know about the financials. I haven't really seen enough from the financial perspective yet. But what I would assume is, like all the other industries out there, as they use AI more, they are going to either, you know, grow, or they can, you know, use their staff in different ways or whatever their strategic plan is going to look like. And so I anticipate the same effects will come in. I don't anticipate that it's going to lower your doctor bill, though, just because you've got that insurance company relationship in the middle, and that's going to drive a lot of that.
Yeah, the unfortunate insurance company. I understand that. So, yep. Dr. Alan Bedell, this has been incredibly valuable. Where can people follow your work and continue this conversation with you?
Yeah, they can go on LinkedIn. You know, I respond to things on there. I respond to, you know, work emails with, you know, alanbedell.ai. You can send me an email there. Happy to respond to it. Or, you know, they can watch my, you know, my TV show on Now Media, AI Today with Dr. Bedell. And we talk about these things. I encourage people to do that because I love responding, and I love helping people understand how to use AI.
That's awesome, man. Well, listen, Alan, thank you for sharing your expertise across education, cybersecurity, robotics, and healthcare. You know, you've given us a pretty clear picture of how AI just isn't about technology. It's about people, progress, preparing for the future, especially. Now, to our viewers, the lesson is this. AI is changing every part of our lives, but the goal isn't to replace us. It's to support us, protect us, and even help save lives. So that's all for today's episode of Ever-Changing Technology. I'm Jim Bradfield. Thank you for watching. And remember, the future belongs to those who learn how to use it.
This has been a Now Media Networks feature presentation. All rights reserved.